So welcome to the super section. We're going to be talking about debugging in general, and in particular, debugging with GDB in for C programs. So first of all, just what is a debugger? A debugger is something that helps you to find bugs, which is good, because we want to find bugs. But it's important to understand a little bit about how the debugger works so that you can know what kind of bugs it can help you find and which kind of bugs it can't. So the kind of debugger we're going to be looking at provides you the ability to stop a program while it's running. And when the program stops, the debugger kind of saves the state of the whole program and then lets you look at it. So you can look around. And when I say look around, what I mean is that you can inspect values, see what values variables have, look inside of arrays, see what's in there, or just in general look around at memory. And then you can start your program again and stop it later and look at all the values. And using this sort of stop and then look around and then go some more and stop, you can kind of get a feel for what your program is doing and where it might be going wrong. The other thing that debuggers can allow you to do is to see what happened when your program crashed. So if your program crashes, you can run it in the debugger, and then it will sort of save the state of the program right before it crashed, more or less. And then you can look around, but of course you can't start the program up again usually, because it's crashed. But it can give you an idea of where it crashed and what might have gone wrong. So to make it a little bit more concrete, suppose we have a really simple program like this one, and we run it in a debugger, what kind of questions can we ask the debugger? Well, we could say, run this program and stop at line 3. And the debugger would load the program up, and it would let it run, and when it got to line 3, the program would stop, and then you could look around at the state of the program. And when I say look around, you could say things like, show me what value AC has. And it might come back and say it has 2 or 3 or whatever value AC might have had. And then you can start the program up again, and it might run until it's finished. So that's the sort of thing that we're going to be able to do with the debugger. So before I go much further, I'm just going to give you an idea of what kinds of debuggers there are and what kind of debugger you're going to be using. So there are actually two different kinds of debuggers in general, something called a symbolic debugger and then a machine code debugger, which sometimes is also called a low-level debugger or an assembly debugger. And they're very different in how they work and often different in the kinds of information that they can give you. So a symbolic debugger essentially simulates your program by looking at the source code and building a model of what's going on inside the machine. And then when you stop the program to look at what's going on with your program, what you're doing is looking at the model of the program and what the model says would be happening in the machine at that point. And we're going to go through this in a little bit more detail in a second. But the main idea is that it's simulating your program. It's not actually running your program as it would run on the machine. A machine code debugger, on the other hand, runs the actual machine code, the actual program as it's compiled, and is able to stop that program and then make a correlation with the source code that was used to generate that program. So it's a different way of attacking the problem. So just in a little bit more detail, a symbolic debugger would take in a source code, and it has a big model of what the program is doing, and it's simulating that program. So what do I mean by a model? Well, in a C program, you have variables. So your model would probably have to include things like what the values of the variables are. So as the program is running, you might set some value to be 17. And you might have some other variable y, which is a string. And you might come later and change x from 17 to 57. And then you might add a new variable and delete a variable. And the model would have to track all of that information. So it's kind of like what you do when you're thinking about what your program is going to do. You actually have a program that kind of imagines what the program would do. And there's other things in these models usually, like the call stack to tell you which functions you've called and where you are, and things like what memory you've allocated and lots of other complicated things in these models. The great thing about these kind of symbolic debuggers is they can be very, very accurate. They can tell you precisely what your program is doing and allow you to step through the program at very small increments. However, in order to be very accurate, you need to have a very precise description of what your programming language means. So the C programming language is not very precise. For example, when I say, give me an integer x, how big is that x? Does anybody know how big it is? 32 bits. Well, unless I'm running the program on my G5, then it's 64 bits. Or if I'm running it on my cell phone, maybe it's 16 bits. So actually, the C language itself doesn't specify exactly how big an int is. It depends on what kind of machine you have. So if you were going to try to sort of simulate a C program, it wouldn't be clear what you should do in this case with this int x. So in general, these symbolic debuggers are not what people typically choose for a low-level language like C, although you will see them with some higher-level languages. So what we're going to be talking about is actually a machine code debugger, or a low-level debugger, and that works completely differently. So a machine code debugger takes source code, and then you use the compiler to generate machine code, which is the actual program that runs. And then if you want to debug it, you give that program over to the debugger. In this case, we're going to be using GDB. And then you also need to give it the source code. And then it makes a correlation between what's going on in the red box and what's going on in the blue box. And the way that it makes that correlation is that when I tell the compiler GCC-G, the compiler puts a little bit of extra information inside of there, inside of the program, the so-called metadata, that helps the debugger figure out how to correlate what's going on in the program to what's going on back in your source code. Okay? So just to give you an idea of what it is that the debugger has to do in order to do this, I'm just going to show you a couple of slides to give you a flavor of what the problem is. So here's a simple program. It declares main, and then it just tests to see whether the number of arguments is 4 and returns true or false. So if I compile this program on my Macintosh, which has a PowerPC, it actually comes out looking something like this. This is the machine code or assembly language. And this is the thing that the debugger actually has, the thing on the bottom. And in this particular case, it turns out that that one line, return AC equal 4, corresponds more or less to these bits of the machine code. And so the debugger, if I say go to line 3 and stop, needs to decide what is that supposed to mean? How many machine instructions do I execute and where do I stop? And this one's particularly difficult because the set of machine instructions isn't even contiguous. It's sort of broken up. If I were to take the program and optimize it by putting the O flag in GCC, I get something out which is completely different. The result no longer looks like that. It looks like that. And then the debugger would have to make a correlation about that and the actual same source program that came before. So as you can imagine, making this correlation between the machine code and the source program is a really hard problem. And GDB, in particular, does a very nice job of it, but every once in a while, you will get things a little bit wrong. So you should be aware that if you have a really complicated program and you're using optimizations and all this sort of stuff, the debugger might be telling you something which is just slightly wrong. But that's not very often. So I wouldn't worry about it too much, but you should be aware that can happen. So in summary, a machine code debugger is better suited for these low-level languages because you actually are going to run the code. But it may not be very precise, and you should be careful about optimizations. So don't turn on optimizations if you want to debug, if you can help it. So that's sort of a general idea of what debugging is and what the debuggers are going to do. What this section is really about, though, is learning how to use GDB in particular for debugging C programs. Right? So if you have a C program and you want to debug it, then you need to compile it and tell the compiler that you want this special information to be put inside of your executable. So the way you do that is you tell the compiler that I want debugging information with dash G. And in this class, we're using C99, so I've also said dash standard equals C99. And I've turned on all the warning messages, dash W all. And then I give it my program file. And as you all know, that's going to produce a program which goes into a.out. And once you have that program, you can load it up with GDB by just typing GDB and the name of your executable, in this case, a.out. And GDB is going to come back and it's going to tell you that. Okay. And what it's done is it's loaded up the program, and now it's going to interact with you so that you can poke around in your program and see what's going on. And the way you interact with GDB is by typing in commands, similar to the way you do on your shell, to ask it to do things for you, and then it does it and reports to you the result. So GDB has hundreds of commands that you can execute, and we're going to be looking at some of the basic commands that you can run in GDB, such as running your program, stepping through it and printing out values, watching variables, those kind of things. But the best way to learn this actually is just to experiment. So I'm going to spend the rest of the section just looking at some programs and running the debugger and seeing what happens. Okay? So I'm going to switch my screen. And it will take the projector a second to adjust the image. Okay. So I'm using Emacs. So in the top here, I have a program, the one that we saw on the slide. And in the bottom here, I have just the normal shell that you have in a Unix system. Okay. I'm going to actually turn on line numbers here so that we can see the line numbers of our program. And I want to compile this program called simple.c so that I can use it in the debugger. So just like we saw on the slide, I need to tell it I'm using C99. I want to hear about all the warning messages that the compiler might generate. Most importantly, I need this G to tell it to put the debugging information in the program. And I'm going to compile it, and it creates a.out. Now, I compiled this program earlier without debugging information, and you can see here on my screen simple, which is the result of compiling the program. And now I have a.out. And as you can see, a.out is just a little bit bigger than simple, even though it's the same program. And that's because a.out has this extra debugging information. What do I type?
Meta X foreground color, I think. Or with an E.
Ah. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay, sorry about that. I have some trouble seeing my prompt, but that's okay.
If we're using make, will that include like the dash G to include the information to be got? Like, are we using make compiler programs?
Yes, if you're using make, then the make file will have to have specified the dash G when it calls the compiler. So for instance, you can't say make dash G. You would have to go into the make file and change it so that the dash G was in your program. Okay? Right, so I just compiled this program, as I said, and you can see that the result of compiling with debugging information is a little bit bigger than before, and that's that debug information that I was talking about. There's actually a program called strip, which will take the debugging information out. So if I strip that program, you'll see that now it's the same size as the one that I had before without debugging information. So if you have a program with debugging information, you decide you don't need it anymore, you could run strip. Or you could just recompile it. It's up to you. But I actually do want to debug this program, so I'm going to now recompile it again because I took the debugging information out. Okay? So now I have my program. And I'm going to run a.out with the debugger. And it loads up, and here's this prompt I was telling you about, unfortunately in cyan. So I can run the program by typing R. So I'll type R. I can also type run, but a lot of the commands you can abbreviate them with single letters. So I type R, so starting the program, program runs, program exits, it tells me the program exited normally. So if that wasn't actually very useful, I would actually like to stop the program in the middle. So in order to do that, I'm going to set a breakpoint, and you set breakpoints with the command B. So I say I'd like to have a breakpoint in main, and it says now we have a breakpoint, number one, and it's at line 4 in this file. So we can see up here in the buffer before that line 4 is that return statement, which is the first thing that's being executed by return. If you didn't have your editor showing you the program, you could also type list, and it would show you the program with the line numbers. Okay, so now that I've set a breakpoint, I can run the program again, and it will stop. It says I've hit this breakpoint at line 4, and now I'm sitting on line 4, and this is the statement that I'm getting ready to execute next, return AC equals equals 4. But now I'm in the middle of running my program, so I can ask the debugger things about my program. For instance, I could say, print out the value of AC, and it says AC is 1. I could ask it to print out the value of AV, and it says AV is this terrible number. Or I could print out AV sub 0, which should contain, does anyone know what AV sub 0 should contain? I'm sorry? Should contain the name of our program. So I print it out. Sure enough, it has the name of our program there. Okay. I could also try to print out something that doesn't belong to me, like AV 10,000, and the debugger will stop me and say, that memory doesn't belong to you, so I'm not going to try to look at it for you. So you might see this message sometimes if you have a variable that's pointing off somewhere that doesn't belong to you and you're trying to look inside of it, you might get this error. That means your pointer is messed up. It's pointing somewhere bad. Of course, it doesn't always tell you this. For instance, if I print AV5, it prints out some strange string. So somehow I've gone off somewhere and looked at some memory that the debugger can't tell that it doesn't belong to me, but actually sort of doesn't belong to me. Okay. All right, so I can type info B to tell me about the breakpoints that I have. It's kind of a status. And it says you have this one breakpoint here, which I'm actually sitting at right now. I could continue running my program by typing C for continue, and the program will go and exit normally. Okay, so that's a sort of basic way to navigate around GDB. And there are a lot of commands like info and R and C and B and all these things. But luckily, GDB has in it a help system. So you can type help, and it will tell you a list of things that it knows how to help you with. For instance, breakpoints. So I can say help breakpoints. And then it says here are things I know about breakpoints. For instance, watch and future break and all these things. And then you could say help B, which is the command we were using. And it gives you some idea of what that command can do and how to use it. So the help system is great inside of GDB. And of course, there's also manuals on the web and everywhere else. And when you're done debugging your program, you type quit and the debugger will stop. Okay? Right. So let's actually look at an interesting program. So here's a program. Let me just turn on our line numbers as we had before. The screen's a little bit small. And this program has a bug in it. Okay, and I'll prove that to you now by compiling it. Tell it I want to use C99. I'm going to turn on my warnings. I'm going to go ahead and put debug information into this file. And you notice the compiler has given me a warning here. That's because I asked for warnings. And if I paid attention to this warning, I would actually find my bug. But let's say that I wasn't paying attention to this warning. I was like, well, it's just a warning. It's no big deal. I'll go ahead and run my program. And it asks me to enter 5 numbers. So I do that. And then it crashes. All right? So this is the case where I have a program that's actually crashing. And I want to use the debugger to try to figure out what's going wrong. So I built the program with debug information, so I can load it up in GDB. And actually, I'm not going to do it that way. Since I'm using Emacs, I'm going to use this internal mode that Emacs has to run GDB interactively. And when I'm running it here, I can now just click to set breakpoints. If I want a breakpoint here, let's see, maybe I can't click. There we go. Now there's a breakpoint there. And I can run the program. And now the program stops, and you see there's a little black arrow on the screen right here letting me know that this is the current place I'm at in my program. I could take a step by typing S, and you see the little black arrow has moved to tell me now I'm inside of rsum. I could step again. I could step again. And we can sort of follow through the program like that. In this case, I'm just going to type continue and let the program run. And the program is going to crash after I give it 5 numbers. OK, so something different has happened. The debugger has told us that the program received something, some kind of signal, and could not access memory, something, something. Right? So I don't know what that means. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to type backtrace, BT, to ask the debugger how I got to where I am. So we know from the black arrow that I'm sitting at line 7. And what this information down here is telling me is that the way I got to line 7 is first we were in main, and then main called rsum from line 23, and then rsum called get from line 14, and now we're at line 7 and we've crashed. Okay? So why did we crash? Well, I can just start printing out values. So let me print out C. C is 5. Okay, that looks like that's probably a good value. I can print out I. I is 0. So maybe I'll print out P. And P is 0. So that's not good, because P is a pointer, and it's pointing to null. And when I tried to assign something to P sub 0, that's not allowed. I could also try to print out P sub I, which is the actual expression on line 7, and it would tell me the same thing. So what caused this error? How did P get to be 0? So the debugger doesn't tell you what the problem is. It just leads you in the right direction. Now, this is the point where we've gone into the debugger. We've gotten some information about where it crashed and what the values of some variables are. And now we need to think. So what is the problem? P is a parameter, right? So that's a great instinct, because we want to know how did P become 0. So P is 0, but P was given to us as a parameter. So how did it get there as a parameter? So if we type backtrace again, we can see that this function get was called by rsum at line 14. So somehow at line 14, which is right here, P has ended up being 0. So how did P get to be 0? That's right, because I passed in answer, and answer is 0. But that's not really what I wanted, was it? One vote for that's not what we wanted. Great. Any guesses? All right. What is the program supposed to do? So it's going to compute the sum of all the elements in RS. But before it computes the sum of all the elements of RS, it's going to initialize RS somehow. But I actually haven't done that. And what I meant to do was to tell get to do something with RS, because get thinks that it's wanting a pointer. Right? So what I really meant to do, instead of putting in RS there, putting in answer, was to put in RS. And if we had looked at the warning message the compiler gave us, we would have noticed there was something wrong, because it was complaining about that answer being passed to get. Okay, so let's say that I assume that I think that's what my bug is. So now I'm going to quit the debugger, and I'm going to make the change to my file, and I'm going to recompile it, and I'm going to run it. And now it seems to work, right? So let's just step through this program and try to get some sense of how it works. So that's the other thing the debugger can be used for, is to give you an idea of what a program is doing if you're not quite sure. So I'm going to run the debugger again, except not in that window. So I'm going to put a breakpoint at main, and I'm going to run the program, and we're just going to step through using S. So I take a step, come here, take a step, I go into get, and now we're doing something with numbers and letters. So he's asking me for numbers. And I'll say continue and let the program run. All right. Any questions about that? Okay. So that's the case when your program is crashing. And the key thing to remember is when the program is crashing, if I put it back to how it was before, the most important thing you can do is just load it into the debugger and run it. And when it crashes, type backtrace and try to see where you are and how you got there, and then think about your program and see if you can figure out the error. Okay? Okay. Enough of crashing. Let's look at a program that has a bug. So here's a program. I'm just going to walk through with you and explain what it's supposed to do. And if you find the bug, don't shout it out. We'll let everyone try to figure it out for themselves. So this program is going to compute the sum and the product of a sequence of numbers. As a matter of fact, five numbers. So similar to the program before, I've got this RS here, which is going to contain the numbers that I'm interested in summing and producting over. And then I have an answer, which is also an array, and there's two things that I want to compute, sum and product. And so for the sum, I start out at 0, and for the product, I start out at 1. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to set each element in RS to a number. So RS 0 gets 1, RS 1 gets 2, and so on. So I have the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc., sitting in RS. All right? Then I'm going to go over that list, and I'm just going to accumulate into answer 0 the sum of all those things, and into answer 1 the product of all those things, and I'm going to print out the answer. Okay? So it's a relatively simple program. It's doing a computation in a kind of long and arduous way, but let's just say that this is our program. All right? So first, let's compile it. tell it that I want to use C99, and it's called bug.c. And now I'm going to run it. And it prints out the wrong answer. So it turns out that the product of the first five numbers is, in fact, 120, but the sum of the first five numbers is not 21, it's 15. So it gave us the wrong answer. So it didn't crash, so we can't use the debugger to detect the crash, but maybe we can use the debugger to figure out why we've gotten the wrong answer. So let's load it up in GDB. Okay, break main list. So something's wrong. Tried to list, doesn't know anything about my program. I typed break main and it gave me some strange number. So what have we done wrong? So remember, the debugger has the machine code and it has to make this correlation to your program. And the way it does that is by looking at this special information that the compiler put in there. But if you were watching when I compiled this program, I forgot to put the dash G. This is what I typed. So the debugger is kind of a little bit confused. So I go back and I put in the G, and now GDB is going to be happier. It knows what program I'm talking about. All right, so I'm going to set a breakpoint on main and run the program. So that'll just get everything started. So here we are, sitting at the beginning of the program. So let's take a step. All right, let's print out answer. That looks pretty good. But somehow between here and the end, answer got messed up somehow. And we don't really have a good clue about it. So what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to ask the debugger to watch answer for me. Actually, I'm going to ask it to watch answer 0, because that's the thing that's getting messed up. And what this says, if I look at my breakpoints, is that he's going to watch this variable, and whenever somebody writes into it, I'm going to stop the program and let you know where I'm at. All right? So now I'm going to run the program. And from the beginning, sure. So we've hit our first breakpoint at main. I'm going to continue. Let's see. Sorry, I've messed up. So watch answer 0. Continue. So what's told me is that my watch point, my watch for answer, has been triggered. And it was triggered on line 8, and the old value was 0, and the new value is now 6. So where's line 8? Line 8 is right here. So remember when, or maybe I haven't said this, but when the debugger says you're on line 8, it means it's getting ready to execute line 8. So everything before that. So how did answer sub 0 get modified right here? It looks something strange is going on. But at least we now have some idea of where in the program things are getting messed up. So let's restart the program. Restart from beginning, yes. And now I'm just going to step through the program one step at a time, right around this part of the code, and try to see what's going on. And what I want to know is what the value of answer is all the time. So I'm going to use this function display, say display answer, and it will just print out answer every time the debugger stops. So as we're taking steps, it's going to show us these values all the time. I'm also going to, so let's say I take a step. So I'm in the loop, and I'm going around the loop. So let me display I as well. Okay. Well, let me also just display RS. Okay. So now I'm stepping through the loop. I is 1, RS has these values in it, answer has those values in it. I'm going to step again. I is now equal to 2. And you can see that RS sub 2 has now been made equal to 3. Our answers still look fine, right? I keep stepping, I equals 3. You see we get the value 4 there. Now finally, RS looks completely initialized. We step again, now I equals 5. And something has happened. So what's happened is we went around the loop too many times. And we started putting values in RS sub 5, which doesn't really exist. It turns out it does exist. It happens to be answer sub 0. So we've just sort of messed things up by going too far. And that's why the answer ended up being off by 6, because we accidentally put 6 in there. Okay? So the key thing to remember about this example is that we use the watch point by saying watch answer to get an idea of when that variable was being changed. And then once we figured out whereabouts it was being changed, then we could step through and display the variables and see what was going on and figure out exactly the problem. So what is the problem, by the way? Yes?
It should be I less than 5.
That's right. It should be I is less than 5. Great. So let's recompile our program and run it, and the bug is fixed. Okay? Any questions about that? No? All right. All right, I have a much harder bug for you. So here's the factorial program. I think you had to write this for one of your assignments. Is that right? No? Well, you saw it.
It
was in the section notes. All right, so we're computing factorial. So here's my factorial function. If I give it an n, it's just going to loop from 1 to, actually, it's going to loop from n down to 1 and multiply everything together. So does everyone agree that computes the factorial? Because we start at n, and then we take answer starts out being 1 right here. And then we multiply it with n, and then n minus 1, and then n minus 2, all the way down to 1, and we end up with a factorial. So we've computed the factorial backwards, sort of. All right? So in main, now we're just going to compute the factorial of all the numbers between 0 and 20, and we're going to print them out. All right? So turn on my line numbers. So C99, tell me about warnings, give me debugging information, and I'm going to run it. And here's what it does. It starts computing factorial, and it looks like it's doing a pretty good job. And then we get to 17, and it gives us the wrong answer. Matter of fact, it gives a crazy answer, minus some, I don't know, 228 million, whatever that number is, right? So we're going to try to use the debugger to figure out why it's giving us the wrong answer, all right? So we know that there's a problem around factorial 17. That's where we first see the problem, all right? So let's load up the debugger. Let me use my... this one. Okay, so I'm going to set a breakpoint in main and run my program to get started. Right? So main is going to go around the loop a whole bunch of times. And actually, we don't care about main really. What we care about is factorial. So I'm going to set a breakpoint in factorial. Okay, and I'm just going to say continue. So you can see we're at factorial with n equals 2. That's not the one we're interested in. We're interested in n equals 17. So I'm going to continue. This is a little bit boring. So I'm going to ask for the breakpoints that I have. And you can see I have two of them. The first one, number 1, is the breakpoint I set on main. And the second one is the breakpoint I've set on factorial. And now I want to put a condition on that second breakpoint. And the way I do that is I type condition on breakpoint number 2 is that n is equal to 17. Now, if I print out the info again, you can see it says stop only if n equals 17. Now I'll say C to continue, and now it goes ahead and goes through the program until it reaches line 5 and the value of n is 17. And that's the thing that we're interested in. All right? So we want to kind of look at what's going on in this case to try to find the error. So I'm going to use display again to display the answer. And I'm going to display n. So I'm going to take a step. So this is the very beginning of the loop. So answer gets set to 1, and n is 17. So now we execute the body of the loop, and answer goes to 17. And then we go around, and n becomes 16. And we execute the body again, so 272. And this goes on for a while. And everything is fine. So we get down to around 6 or so. And then suddenly, answer goes crazy. So we were doing fine. Answer was this number here. And then we were on n equals 5. And we executed this times 5. And we got something crazy. So this actually isn't very helpful. We can print out answer in a different format by putting a slash and then telling it what format you want. And there's lots of different formats. One of them is X for hexadecimal. And it tells me this is what it looks like in hexadecimal. That's not helping me a lot either. So I can use T, which says print out in binary. And this is the number in binary. Okay. So what is going on? It's gotten too big. I'm sorry? Right, so remember, that's right. It went into remember, in the 2's bit representation, this bit is the sign bit. And the number got so big that we ended up putting a 1 there. And now the computer thinks the whole number is negative. And that's why we're getting a bad answer. Okay. So I want to go through this again and just show you how that actually happens and actually give you one other command that you can use when you're printing things out. So remember, I have these breakpoints. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to restart my program with run. It says you want to start from the beginning. Sure. So now I'm at my breakpoint main. I'm just going to continue. Now I'm at my factorial where n is 17. And instead of printing out answer in this format, I want to display answer as a binary number. I have to tell it what I want to display. Okay. But this display actually isn't great. You can see that I'm displaying answer both in decimal right here, and I'm displaying it in binary here, but it's not showing me all 32 bits. It's only showing me some of the bits. So I want to tell it, please show me all of the bits. And there is a way to do that. When you say display, you tell it that you have a word, the W. And unfortunately, because of a strange quirk with GDB, when you use this command, you have to give it a memory address. So I have to tell it the address of answer is the memory location that I want to look at. I can't just say answer. That's a small inconvenience. Okay, and so there, now we see all 32 bits. And now we can step through the program, and we can see how answer is growing in binary as we step through. And I'm actually going to undisplay number 3, because I don't want to see that one anymore. Okay. And then as n gets to be around 5, you can see right here, before we had this number, and then we did a multiplication, and now we have this number, but the computer thinks that's negative. And that's why we got this strange negative number. Right? So how could we fix this problem? Any guesses? Yes, I can specify unsigned int everywhere. Unsigned int. And I also need to tell printf that I'm printing an unsigned int. Okay, let's recompile it. Ah, and now we've done a little bit better. As you can see, 17 looks like it might actually be right, but 18 now is not right, it's too small. And that's because even though we've sort of gotten one extra step out of our factorial by using that extra bit, we're still running out of bits.
How big is float for long,
long? Long, long. It depends on what machine you're using. But long, long is probably bigger, so you could try long, long. But then eventually you're going to run out of bits in your long, long, too. Okay? Right. So the interesting thing about this example is, you know, using the display to watch your variables and also being able to print them out in the different formats so that you can see what's going on with the actual representation of your number. Okay? Great. Here's a better factorial. Not better, shorter. It's a shorter factorial. So this program also computes factorial, this function. And the way it does it is it brings in an n. And if the n is 0, then it gives you 1. Otherwise, it returns n times the factorial of n minus 1. So that's the recursive version of factorial. Right? So I'm going to compile this program. With debugging information. Okay, and I'll run it. This is what it does. It prints out the factorial of 15, which from our previous example we know is small enough, 15 is small enough that we've got a good result here. So let's load it up in the debugger. And we're dealing with this program. So I'm going to set a breakpoint on factorial. And here we are at factorial with n equals 15. And if I take a step, now we're at factorial again with n equals 14, 13, so forth. So I could look at the breakpoints I have. I just have the 1. So I can put a condition on 1 that n is equal to n is equal to 0. And I can take a step. And now I'm at factorial, and factorial is returning. And what happened? Okay, I don't know what happened. Let's try again. We have a breakpoint on factorial. Oh, didn't even do anything that time. All right, I'm going to quit. Let's start again. All right, from the beginning. I set a breakpoint on factorial. I'm going to put a condition that n equals 0, and I'm going to run the program. So something has gone wrong. Does anyone have any idea what's gone wrong? This is a tricky question. All right, let's do some more exploring. Let me restart the program. Well, let me put a breakpoint in main, I guess. And let me try looking at my breakpoints. So I have breakpoint number one, which will stop only if n equals one, and I have one at main. So it should stop, right? It doesn't. So what does this expression do in C? You guys all know C, right? If you were to type this in your C program, what would it do? It assigns 0 to n. You need two equals, exactly. So the condition on one that I really meant was that n is equal to 0. Now if I run it again, so now we've stopped on breakpoint one. So you have to be careful in the debugger because you can actually change variables inadvertently like this. When I have the debugger stopped, I can just set n equal to anything I want and then let the program go again. And that's good for testing things out sometimes, but you have to be a little bit careful. So now that I'm sitting at fact of n equals 1, I can ask for a backtrace. So how did I get here? And it's going to tell me that, well, you were at main, and then main called fact, and fact called fact, and so on and so forth, until finally we arrived all the way up here, fact with n equals 0. And so if we were to step through this program, watching the little black arrow at the top of the screen here, you can see that we are returning from fact, and returning from fact, and returning from fact, and again and again. And if I look at my stack trace, now there's only these many facts. So I could step some more. And now there's only those many facts. And only one left, finally. And now we're back in main. The program is done. Okay? Okay, so we're going to stop for just a minute while they change the tape. And think about if you have any questions. Okay, we have a new tape. Thank you for waiting while we had a commercial break. So just to remind you a little bit, let's say we go back to this program that was crashing before. You remember we had found this bug that we were passing the wrong thing into get, which was actually 0, and then we were having a memory fault. So remember, if I compile that program normally, for instance, like this, and I find out that it's crashing, I might load it into the debugger. That was the wrong program. And run it. And ask for a backtrace. let's try again. So there's my program. A little bit surprising. So, all right, anyway, the unpracticed example's not going to work for me, but just make sure that when you do find a program that's crashing, that you're sure to put in your dash G to get debugging information. Otherwise, the debugger's just not going to work. Actually, it will work. It'll just print out things that are probably confusing. So just one more thing I want to mention to you. If we go back to this program, which had this strange bug where we were accidentally going past the array. Remember, we had an equals here. And we were accidentally overriding answer sub 0. And that was causing our program to do something bad, give us the wrong answer. If I were to compile that program, with the bug in it and run it, you see it gives the wrong answer. Now, if I had, say, declared these things in the other order, then the program would have worked fine. So there's still a bug in this program, and we're still overriding some memory that doesn't belong to us. It just turns out in this particular case, I was lucky enough that whatever it was that I messed up didn't cause any problems. So just because your program is not crashing doesn't necessarily mean that you haven't done something wrong. And as a matter of fact, I think if you took the program that I have now and ran it on the Linux machines, it would behave the way it was behaving when I had them reversed because of the differences in the way the machines manage their stacks. And that's the kind of thing that you can discover with your debugger. Right, so I actually don't have any more examples. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yes?
I have one. It's a statement, one question. When you're doing this in the lab and you're like stepping through your program 60 million times and you get tired of saying S enter, if you just hit enter, it'll do the command you just entered again. So you can just sit there and drink Coke and one command.
Right, so yeah, good tip. If you just press enter in GDB, it will do whatever you typed in last again. So it's a nice shortcut. All right, thank you for coming. And see you in office hours, I guess.